The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, the podcast edition. Whoa, music got a little out of control there. Kind of like that song, but it's trying to take over. Jim isn't here with us today. My name is Chris Stein, as in the intro. Justin, which doesn't get any credit in the intro, is here instead of Jim. So, Justin, if we make this a regular gig, well, I'll redo the intro so that it talks about you.
I seem to be on the show more and more these days.
More and more, so I know. Maybe Jim will start fishing more and more.
Maybe I'll boycott the show until I get my name on it.
Which is where he is. He's not technically fishing right this moment, but his act of fishing yesterday caused him not to be able to do the podcast with us. So on today's podcast, Justin's going to help me out. We're going to answer a few email questions to try to get caught up. And then we're also going to tag on to the end of the podcast, as we do many times, not all the time, a copy of or a recording of our local Colorado radio show. On this radio show, we talk about the tax torpedo. I think Jim has talked about it a little bit before, but we have a broader discussion on the tax torpedo and how Social Security benefits and their tax situation can change and torpedo your, maybe not destroy your retirement success, but certainly lessen the degree of success just because of the tax issue. So we talk about where the torpedo hits, how you might avoid that. So stick around after we answer a couple of these Social Security questions on the podcast here. So I'm going to start with the shortest one. We'll get right to it. With Jim not here, we can dive right in, which is going to be shocking to
real those quick, real on the quick, podcast. Real yeah, quick banter. I don't mean to do this to everybody, but I was just scrolling through my LinkedIn and I saw you are celebrating. One day ago, you were celebrating 10 years here at Jim Saulnier & Associates.
I am?
10 years. Yeah, it says it right here. Chris Stein, CFP, is celebrating 10 years. Good for you.
Wow. I'm celebrating by recording a podcast with you, Justin.
Yes. Well, it was one day ago, so I don't know what you're doing yesterday.
There was no celebrating yesterday, so I delayed it till today.
Okay.
Wow, that seems like a long time ago.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it'd been 10.
Yeah.
But here we are. And this the radio show, which was the predecessor to this podcast here, we started about a year or so after I joined Jim. So we're approaching 10 years of doing this crazy show, which... crazy is probably a good description for it a lot of times. But anyway.
Back to it.
Any more banter?
Nope, that's all I had.
Well,
keep it quick.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Yes.
So we're going to go, we're going to dive right into an email. This email comes to us from the fine state of Arizona. I will keep their identity anonymous.
Do they say where
maintain
in Arizona?
Their anonymity? Or I say it like Jim, yeah. Anonymity.
Anonymity.
Every time he says it like that, it sounds like manatee to me, like the Florida.
Anamanatee?
Anamanatee. Anyway, no, I don't. Somewhere in the great state of Arizona.
It's a wonderful state.
So here's the question. I'm at full retirement age. I plan on waiting until I'm 70 before taking Social Security under my work record.
Okay.
Until then, I'm withdrawing 50% on my ex-husband's work record. We were married for 13 years. Okay. So I'm going to pause right there. As long as you were married for at least 10 years, you still qualify for spousal benefits on your ex-spouse's record, even though you're divorced. So there are some restrictions on waiting after you're divorced in certain circumstances beyond the scope of this question. But that's why she mentioned the 13 years. And I would maybe correct her word withdrawing. She's not sucking away any of his benefits. It's just a benefit to which she's entitled. And she's claimed it and is claiming it. And it's 50% of her ex-spouse's full retirement age benefit, otherwise known as his PIA, his primary insurance amount. So that's her plan. She's doing that. But then she goes on to say, please explain what will happen if I remarry. Mm. Will I have to wait one full year before withdrawing 50% of my new husband's work record? So that rule, when you get married, you're not eligible immediately for spousal benefits normally. You have to wait 1 year.
Right.
To be eligible for survivor benefits, it's only 9 months, actually. So it's difference between survivor and spousal. But okay. Spousal benefits, you have to be married for 1 year before you become eligible. So that means normally, say that she'd never been married before and she were to marry at 66, her full retirement age, which she says she's at right now, and she's getting married for the first time, she wouldn't immediately be eligible for spousal benefits. She'd have to wait a year. That's the normal situation. Mm-hmm. Now, there's an exception, though. So when she says, please explain what will happen if I remarry, if she's currently claiming benefits on her ex-spouse,
yes.
When she remarries, she can no longer do that. So some people might be saying, no, wait a minute, she's getting remarried after 60, so she can still claim on her ex's record. You're thinking of survivor benefits, right. If that's where your mind was going. Survivor benefits, you're able to maintain from your deceased spouse as long as you wait to remarry until after you're age 60. So you don't get forced to connect your benefit to your new spouse if you're claiming survivor benefits and you wait till after 60.
Okay.
Spousal benefits have no age issue, no age limit. We always talk about it. If you remarry at any time, you're hooking your wagon to a new horse.
Right,
Jim always says we're hooking our horse to a new wagon. It's I think it's more appropriate that your wagon, which is the driver, the driving force of the wagon is the horse.
Mm-hmm.
So the benefits are coming from the horse in my metaphor. So if you unhook from your ex-spouse who's still living, so you're not collecting a survivor benefit, you're going to hook your wagon to this new horse, and whatever spousal benefit that you can receive from their retirement or from their work record is what you're entitled to at that point. The issue is, does she have to wait a year?
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's the key to this question, and luckily, no.
Right.
She has there's a special rule that if you were entitled or what's called potentially entitled, which is a weird... I'm not going to go down that path because there's a difference between eligible, potentially entitled, and entitled. Those actually three things, which sound very similar, actually mean different things in Social Security.
Yes.
So entitled or potentially entitled to a spousal benefit the day before you were married, you're immediately entitled with the new spouse.
Just a spousal benefit in general, though. So because she was potentially entitled or entitled,
right,
to her previous spouse's benefit, that triggers the eligibility to be actually
immediate
entitled
with the
or
new
immediately
spouse.
Yeah, with
the new spouse. So essentially, they say you've gotten to the position where you could claim a spousal benefit with someone else. Just because you remarry, we're not going to force you to back up and prove right. another year of marriage in order to become entitled.
That would be fought in the courts because they would be discouraging marriage, I would imagine.
Yeah, so there's it's just a policy. It's the rule.
Yeah,
so
they got it right.
So in this case, absolutely. So because for her, if she's collecting, there would be a huge disadvantage to getting married financially, and that she'd have to, if this rule doesn't exist, she would have to then shut off her Social Security benefits for a year before they could start back up again.
Right.
Now, even though she's immediately entitled, she doesn't get to maintain the connection to the ex-spouse at all. So whatever spousal benefit she's entitled to with the new spouse is the amount she's going to get. There's no protection that your benefit won't go down.
Right.
They're just saying you're not going to have to wait the year grace period before right. you start collecting again.
But if she ends up, say, leaving this new spouse in the future, for whatever reason it may be, then she kind of just goes to the highest benefit, right? She can hitch her cart to any horse at that point in time, whichever one's greater, right? Is that accurate?
If she were to be married for 10 years to the new spouse,
yeah.
Then she actually could pick and choose. If she were to divorce again,
she could actually choose, or would they just give her highest benefit?
She could choose. Well, I mean, she'd choose the highest one.
Clearly.
There wasn't any reason to choose the lower one, but she could choose them. Now, one thing that wasn't in this, which is kind of morbid to think about, if because she's deciding whether she's going to get married or not.
Right.
Financially, I'm not saying this is the best thing in the world to happen. This is not.
I like the road you're going down.
Financially,
my language.
If she were to wait until her ex-spouse passes away, she would then be entitled to a doubling of her, you know, her Social Security benefit would go up because she'd be carrying a survivor benefit now instead of a spousal benefit, and it would stick around even if she remarried because she's over the age of 60.
So
it gives her, you know. So I'm not saying, I'm just putting it out there that if that were to happen, I'm not putting it out there as a strategy. This is, you know, you don't choose to have this happen. But if the ex-spouse were to pass away, that benefit now would convert to a survivor benefit.
And
then the rules are a little bit different.
She would have to have that survivorship benefit before she got married, though. Is that an accurate statement? Or if, for instance...
As long as she's collecting the survivor benefit before she gets married, they allow her to keep it.
All right. So she couldn't, say, marry this person and then just wait for the other guy to pass away.
No, the timing would be wrong on that. No. Right. As long as you're collecting the survivor benefit
first, if this guy passes away out of the blue, somehow, some way...
Her benefit doubles effectively, approximately. Right. We don't have all the numbers, but the spousal benefit is half, where the survivor benefit's 100%.
Oh.
So she gets that, and then she could keep it until she turns 70 and turns on her own, and she could marry, and it wouldn't derail that plan. So if, you know, we don't know anything about this ex.
Yeah, but if he's on his last leg,
right, if there's that might affect, and this is kind of a, you know, an unromantic criteria to decide whether you're going to marry.
Until my
ex-spouse is in the hospital, they don't expect him to live very long. Gee, when we look at the numbers, this is a terrible situation. But we should not get married until they pass away. I love you very much, but you know
that would be
disclaimer. But it's so again, kind of a morbid topic and not a strategy per se, because you can't control when that person's going to pass away. But if it's imminent,
it's a consideration.
It would be a consideration to think about, because the survivor benefit is you wouldn't be forced to change the horse on your wagon.
Right.
You could keep the horse, who's now passed away, and ride away in the wagon until you turn 70 and collect substantially more benefits. But
do you want to continue beating this dead horse, or
no? We're not going to beat the dead horse, or beat the horse to death. No, that we got. You got to say it right. You got to say it the gym way. Do you want to continue beating this horse to death? That's the gym version.
Sorry. You know, it's funny.
It's hard to say it wrong.
I know it is.
Somehow it just flows out of gym like water. But
my wife has the same issue though.
Oh, mixing metaphors and
idioms,
wrapping around.
Yeah, she just, I mean, She flows with it, and it's like, wait a minute, no, that's wrong. Yeah. That makes no sense at all, right. And we have a continuing joke. They have a list.
Well, don't ever let Jim and your wife get in the same room.
I think they're going to be on the radio show together at some point in time.
Because
he wants to do a show on what she does, which kind of end-of-life directives and things like that. So I'm really excited to see how she performs on the radio or podcast, especially with maybe first timer nerves. I'm very excited about this.
I had no idea this was. Good. Oh yeah, this just. I heard this might happen, but I didn't realize there was the issue of.
Oh yeah, I get a new one at least every other day. So
nice.
Yeah, it's fun.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that. So, second Social Security question. So this one comes in from the fine state of Georgia, well known for peaches and bulldogs, right?
Bulldogs?
To Georgia Bulldogs.
Oh, I get. Oh, right. All right. I know about. I just always consider them a peachy little state. I don't think about the vicious bulldogs.
I don't think. They're not pit bulls.
Right.
They're like the short, squatty bulldog.
Okay.
At least that's on the helmets,
right.
Isn't it?
Right. So yeah. Like an English bulldog?
Yeah. I'm not sure how the connection to England was in there, but yeah. It's the what I envision the mascot on the sideline Georgian bulldog is an English bulldog looking thing.
I don't follow sports too much. Too busy, learning
biking.
About Social Security.
Mountain biking,
yeah.
That's
no
a sport.
Oh, it sure is. Yeah. I would recommend it for anyone that needs to get some frustration out. It really works great.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's an anger management tool?
Well, you get to focus on other things,
like living?
Not flying over rocks, yeah. Right?
Or off a cliff.
And also, there's the natural thing where, you're exercising, getting your cardiovascular system going, and that relieves stress.
You lost me there at exercising.
Oh, well, it's fun, too. Yeah. I mean, I could never get on a road bike for more than 10 minutes and not be completely bored to death. Yeah. I mean, it is just awful. It's boring. It's uncomfortable. And I'm sure it's great for you physically. I mean, I've done tens of thousands of road biking miles in my day. The day I went mountain biking, I never got on a road bike again. I mean, it's that good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Either
Maybe
way.
I should try it.
Yeah.
I have a mountain bike in my garage.
Yeah. I can recommend some.
I've only ridden it on the streets, though. So.
Oh, boy. Yeah. It's boring on the streets.
Well, it gets you from A to B.
Yeah. Yeah, it's functional.
Just a quick little get on the bike trail, head over, have a icy or something. And I kind of offset the exercise from the bike with some type of sugar consumption.
Ice cream, yeah.
Like going for a slushy or
Slurpee
or something.
Well, that's kind of the
that's really what gets me to the destination because I know that's there.
Right. Well, yeah, you look at the mountain biking culture. It is just entwined with drinking beer afterwards. So you earn
the beer?
Beers. Yeah,
got it. So back to the great state of Georgia. Where we get this following question. It's kind of lengthy. I'm going to try to summarize it a bit because it's a little funky, but it's about a topic that I've covered on the blog before, but a lot of people get affected by this, but few people understand it or question it. So here goes. I began receiving my Social Security retirement benefits in June of 2016. I turned 68 in May. So he turned 68. So he's 2 years past his full retirement age.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, he's hypothetically, or theoretically, I guess, has earned 2 years worth of delayed retirement credits, right? Which are 8% per year that you earn. Now, I'll give you a heads up right now. We always talk about it as 8% per year, but you actually earn them on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So you get 0.75% every month for delaying. 8 divided by 12 is what gives you.
Right.
And is that? It's late in the day, so now my mental math is off.
Sounds right.
Isn't
yeah.
that 3/4?
Yeah.
Sounds right.
Yeah. 8 divided by 12.
Okay. That's 4/6. 2/3. No, 67%. It's 0.67. See, I'm looking to you to confirm my math.
I'm just agreeing with
Apparently.
You. You're my.
Stop being so agreeable.
You're
NBA.
My elder.
My brain's
and
old.
And mentor.
So 0.67% per month.
It's the end of the day for me.
Oh,
I've been working since...
Here, take this calculator.
6 a.m. this morning. Okay, I've got...
So you actually earn them on a monthly basis. So if you delay a month, you don't have to delay a whole year and then you get 8%. Every month you delay, you get a little bit, which we summarize by saying 8% per year.
Okay.
So he's got 2 years worth, so his benefit should have been 16% higher than his age 66 benefit.
Okay.
I was told that my benefit would be $27.54 per month. I commented to the rep that by my calculations, I should receive about $28.10. The rep agreed with that figure and stated three things. That the $27.54 benefit was calculated through January of 2016. Well, this is May, or actually June in 2016, where he's going into claim. And she's saying, well, the $27.54 is through January. Second thing, January 2017 benefit would increase to give him the proper credits. And that three, he'd receive a lump sum of the short that he was experiencing from June through December. Well, this is where things go haywire. I'm not going to read the rest because he goes on to complain that after being told this, he never received the lump sum benefit. He did see the adjustment he was expecting in January of 2017, but he never got the lump sum for the shortage that he was experiencing for those 6 months, which totaled about $500 or $600 he was short.
Okay.
And he's appealed it and he's still waiting to hear, and he was reaching out to us for confirmation. And I have bad news. The Social Security rep was wrong.
Oh.
Your denial was correct. And that's because of how they credit you with the delayed retirement credits. And this is super bizarre. Even though he had waited two full years before claiming his retirement benefit, which should have given him 16%, 8 times 2, 16% delayed retirement credit increase in his benefit, they actually calculate and award you your delayed retirement credits every January. So as of January, he hadn't earned...
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah, just brace yourself.
Really?
He hadn't earned the full 2 years yet. So even though he turned on his benefit then in May or June, it's as if he's getting the same amount as if he would have claimed in January. So through the rest of that year, essentially this rule comes from the fact that your benefit for the year is set in January. To include COLAs.
Yep.
That have happened, delayed retirement credits, other adjustments, all that stuff. They do all the calculations. It's almost like there's a guy they employ in January to figure this all out for everybody, and then he goes on vacation the rest of the year.
But they're not going to go back and say and then prorate.
So then his May or June rolls around.
Right.
Unlike, and he claims, well, he's being paid as if he claimed in January when he should have been paid as if he claimed in June, which is reality. Then he rolls around to January of 2017. January of 2017, they look and say, oh, look, you actually did wait 2 years, so we're going to award you the rest of those delayed retirement credits. So starting in January of 2017, you get what you thought you should have been getting.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a little COLA in there as well.
Yeah.
But unlike other things where when you, air quote, should have received something but didn't, where Social Security, when they realize the error or make the correction, they literally send you an additional payment in a lump sum saying, hey, sorry about this mess up that we had for these few months. Here's the adjustment, and we're just going to give it to you in
this
one lump sum.
This is just how it works, but we're sorry.
Yeah, we're sorry. We screwed up. This fixes it. That never happens with this. Those lost dollars for the months that you had...
So it just is
now bad. It's never a huge amount,
because
if you think about it, the worst case scenario, I guess the best case is you claim in February and you are owed an extra month of delayed retirement credits that you don't get. The bad news is you have to live with it for 11 months, but it's only 1 month off. Follow me? So if you claimed in February, you're going to be paid as if you were claiming in January. So there's really just 1 month of delayed retirement credits you miss out on, even though it's going to affect you for 11 months.
Right, that's kind of worst case, right?
Well, but it's only 1 month. It's 11 months worth, but it's only a little bit. Now, if you wait until June, you're being robbed of or taken back 6 months of delayed retirement credits, but you only experience the shortage for 6 months instead of 11.
Mm.
So those two things offset one another. When one's higher, the other's lower, and one's lower, the other's higher. But in no case I've really seen monetarily, we're not talking about thousands and thousands of dollars here. We're talking about, like, this person had one of the worst scenarios I've seen, and it was about $580 or something he thought he was owed. He's never going to get it. He can appeal till the cows come home, or how would Jim say it? He could appeal the cows jumping over the moon. Or so. I don't know what the I don't know how Jim would say it, but he could appeal it.
Cows jump over the moon, though, right?
Well, hey diddle diddle,
yeah,
with cats and fiddles, right? And yeah, cat, yeah. Anyway,
either way,
he's not going to get it. So I've already emailed him actually to give him the bad news. He's wasting his time and the time of the Social Security office by pursuing this appeal because he was treated. The system ended up treating him exactly how he should have been. The person that needs a correction, and if he was wanting to do a community service for us all, he would contact the rep that gave him the wrong advice, the wrong information, and let them know how his case was resolved so that person does not continue to give out bad information.
Yeah.
Because yeah. And I say it's a community service because it costs us all of us who are planning to collect Social Security or are collecting it, because when people are having to deal with paperwork of appeals, when they're appealing a rule that is mm-hmm. just the rule, it's a waste of everyone's time.
You think there's any chance that, you know, there could be a grassroots uprising for everyone that's experienced this, and through massive amounts of appeals and piles of paperwork, they'll just go and change the rule?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
Now, that rule is weird enough. Here's the strange thing. If you wait till age 70 to claim,
uh-huh.
no matter when, what month of the year that you turn 70,
they get it right.
You get all your delayed retirement credits up to that point. So they can do it. The computer can figure it out, but they only bother to do it if you've waited all the way to age 70, and then they'll give you your full delayed retirement credits to up to the minute. Starting immediately. You don't have to wait until the following January.
Where do you come up with this knowledge? This is insanity.
Isn't it bizarre?
Yeah.
Well, where I come up with it, I don't
question
it'd
like
be,
this.
It'd be nice if I just, you know, read through it like a dictionary
and
then it was just
it.
All
yeah.
stuck in
it.
Yeah. It isn't. Where this comes from is people asking me questions.
And, you gotta
and I'm like,
it.
Boy, that's interesting. And I go research it and then find out. And then because it's connected to this bizarre story, it tends to yeah. stick. So yeah. over time, I've had to research enough of these questions. That's kind of how we self-taught ourselves Social
right,
Security.
Right.
Is we didn't know. We started off not knowing some fairly basic stuff, and now it's gotten where we have these kind of bizarro questions that come up. And I'm still surprised at stuff that I find in the operations manual that I never would have predicted. If somebody said, well, how do you think this works? I still will, as much as I know about it, all I do now, I'll say something that's probably 180 degrees wrong, but at least I'm smart enough to say, but my guess is it's the other way because Social Security is so crazy. you know, at least I put a footnote on it that I assume it should work like this, but I've been burned enough times where I would say, you know, I think it's going to be like this, and then I find out it's totally not. It's totally not because of some bizarre rule that exists for a reason that is difficult to find out. Some things we can look back historically and dig through some of the kind of negotiations and stuff. But what we have to do is go back and read the minds or the notes of the people that negotiated all this stuff and sat down and wrote these rules initially to try to gauge what their thought process was. Or some of these, the rule is in place because they wanted to prevent something mm-hmm. that seemed to be a loophole. But nobody these days even knows what that loophole was to then say, oh, yeah, it's totally justifiable to have this rule. It'd be really interesting to pick their brains and figure out, why is it like this? You know, why do you do this and not this way? And why do you do this between 66 and 70, but somehow when they reach 70, you do it differently? Why?
Right,
you
know, right.
I'll never know, yeah. probably, you know, I don't know. So that's a doozy. So we've knocked out two more nice Social Security questions here. I think we're, believe it or not, caught up on the Social Security questions we've gotten by email. So if you've got some more, please feel free to send them to us. If you go to jimhelps.com, that's jimhelps.com, you can find the contact form there so you can submit questions to us. We have still a slew, probably 8 or 9 non-Social Security related questions on a variety of issues. A few of them, a few of them are so long, essentially they're asking us to do a full-blown retirement analysis for them in the form of a question on a podcast, which is not going to happen. But what we're going to do is try to find some key questions they have in there and answer those for the benefit of others that are listening. But I guess I'll provide this advice to you. If you have specific questions or if you've got some particular story about something that's happened and you're wanting to confirm whether it's true or not, or someone told you about a rule of Social Security or claiming your pension or a FERS issue or, you know, any estate planning issue or something, and it's a pretty clearly defined question, and this is a prime opportunity for you to get that question asked for free, essentially, by allowing us to answer it on the podcast. If you've got, hey, here's my retirement plan over the next 5 or 6 pages, I'd like to know what you think and what you recommend I do. That's not a podcast question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to dissuade you from contacting
us. It's got to benefit more than one person, right?
That's so specific to you that, and it's so long, we couldn't possibly read it over the air and have people grasp it. We'd have to read through it several times and have it in front of us to be able to really digest it. We'd be happy to work with you on those questions. And as Jim points out, we can do it on an hourly basis. We can provide you with specific advice on just those questions that you've got, but you've got to recognize what you're asking, which is I want a comprehensive assessment of all of these 18 factors that I've laid out and want to get your advice on where I should go from here.
Would it be even possible to maybe they just want some airtime? You know, they could go through this, record the whole conversation that they paid for hourly with Jim, and then broadcast it?
Oh, we could do that, I guess. Just start recording Jim's consultations with people?
Yeah.
And make those podcasts?
We'll have a never-ending podcast.
Sure. So, we welcome your questions. And we really like the ones that are fairly tightly defined. Some can be, this was a little long, because it was really on one topic. He was promised one thing. He didn't get it. Are they telling me the truth? Are they right or am I wrong? Should I appeal this, continue my appeal, or should I give up? And this person needs to give up and move on. He's not getting his $500.
Yeah, so our goal is kind of to answer a direct question, maybe allude to some of the gotchas, not get into all the fine, minute details, even though maybe it seems like we do that a lot, because there's always more details to get into, but we're happy to answer those questions.
Right. So thanks for joining us. Like I mentioned before, we're going to tag on to the end of the podcast here a recording of our radio show that plays this week in Northern Colorado, where we talked about, Justin joined us and expanded on the tax torpedo, which Jim has mentioned recently in the past. It has come up, but we have a broader conversation about the tax torpedo and really how it affects you. And I think it's a little more understandable than maybe we've described it in the past. And at the end, we actually answer another Social Security question. So we've got a couple of things that are hopefully interesting to more than just our Colorado audience. That's why we tagged it onto the podcast. So thanks, everybody, for joining us this week. I bet Jim will be back with us next week. And hope he has another Jimism to share. Maybe he'll bring something, a fishing story for us. So
there you go.
Thanks, Justin, for joining me today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So have a nice afternoon, everybody. We'll see you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement.
Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556. Rocking down high.
Good morning and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show. A little correction, it's not Jim and Chris today, it's Chris and Justin. So Justin Fundelinski is joining me this morning here on the Retirement and IRA Show. And Jim is busy doing something. I know that yesterday he went fishing, but today he's probably paying the price for having fished.
That's exactly what's
so
happening.
He's playing catch up. So welcome, Justin. I know we've got actually kind of an interesting topic to talk about today. It is a bit Social Security related, but not not really a Social Security rules and strategies kind of a situation. Although I guess in the end we could talk about a strategy to avoid a dilemma or a problem that you're going to point out here. But so today's mostly going to be a Social Security themed show, but on a topic expanding on a topic that we haven't really mentioned a lot before. I know Jim's chatted briefly about the Social Security tax torpedo. Is what did we coin that phrase in house, or is
I couldn't track that one down. Actually, I looked for it, but it seemed a lot of people have used it.
Okay, yeah. So we'll give someone credit for it. We just don't know who. How about we just say we didn't come up with it? So
it's far better than like the appropriate, you know. I guess CPA term would be a windowed tax bracket. You know, it's not as fancy.
Tax torpedo sounds far more
far better. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, here we are on the radio.
Here we are.
Jim usually has something kind of off the wall to mention at this point, so I guess we can just skip through that and
maybe
move on to the topic. Yeah. That'd be very odd for the retirement
like
and IRA
more,
show.
More personal or just simply
it could be anything.
Anything at all. Yeah.
Anything at all.
I think I might have broke my finger yesterday. Take a look at this.
It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
An odd color.
It is. It sure is. It's strange,
strangely
large, too.
Not a normal finger color.
Yeah, yeah.
And good thing you didn't have a ring on that finger, because it would probably be on there permanently.
That's actually what happened to my last ring on my ring finger, surprisingly.
Yeah.
I had to have it cut off because of a dislocated finger. I don't think I've broken my finger. I think it was just dislocated this time. But different hand, same finger.
Interesting.
New story, I guess. Same reason, though. Mountain biking again. It'll get you. Yeah. But
going up or down?
That one was going down. The first one was going up. I don't know how you fall going up a hill, but I managed it.
Well, it's like falling up the stairs.
Yeah, exactly.
I tend to do that occasionally.
the more technical things.
I fall up the stairs far more than I fall down, luckily.
Yeah, luckily. That's good. That's good. Yeah. I did actually get to go to Crested Butte for the first time in my life as a relatively new Coloradoan here. I've never been up there. It's an amazing place.
Isn't it amazing up there? Did you do any mountain biking up there?
That's all I did.
Oh, yeah.
I camped, and I mountain biked, and I hiked. I had to throw in some time with my wife here and there and do some hiking and whatnot, restaurants. But I spent a lot of time mountain biking. It is a mountain biking paradise for anyone who ever wants to go up there or has gone up there. Just lovely. Lovely. I'm ready to go back. I'm ready to purchase property.
Not that far away.
Move there indefinitely.
That might be a little extreme.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be hard to find work, to fund the overly expensive property. But, anything for the love of bikes.
Well, great. I'm glad we have that update.
And was that off the wall enough?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because we usually just get Jim updates about his garden and things like that. So.
Yeah.
So, moving on to the topic of the day, the tax torpedo. So, why don't, Justin, you've done a fair amount of research and crunching of numbers recently on this, because we've had several clients that have faced the tax torpedo. Maybe you could describe, for those who have no idea what we're talking about, what is the tax torpedo?
It's actually a pretty tough concept to just break into without any, I guess, background on how Social Security gets taxed.
So our 10 words or less approach isn't going to work.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know about that. But I'll try and be pithy, as Jim would say. But really, it's a factor of how Social Security gets taxed. A lot of people often think Social Security isn't taxed at all, and that might be true for them. But the reality behind how Social Security is taxed is, depending on how much income you have, whether it be Social Security or other income, your Social Security income will slowly phase into taxation. Okay, so it'll be one of those numbers on your tax return that says this is actually taxable income. So it can be from 0 to 85% of your total benefits that you receive can be taxable. That's not the actual tax rate on it. I'm saying right. It's actual taxable
income. And a lot of people hear that wrong, and they're like, they're going to take 85% of my Social Security. No, what that means is there's a line right on the front of your 1040, and I think it's page 1.
Yeah, it might be 15 A and B, I want to say.
Yeah, something about halfway down on there. And you'll record your total kind of off to the left a little bit. You have your total Social Security that you collect, but then the amount you actually record that gets added in as income will either be zero or half of your actual Social Security benefits or up to 85% of your Social Security benefits. So not all of your Social Security ever gets kind of sucked into the income tax calculation, but for a lot of people, and it's more and more every single year, because the threshold upon which you reach taxability of your Social Security benefits is not increased for inflation. Mm. So as people make more and more and more money because of inflation, which is a way of life, in, at least in our economy, wages go up, income goes up, other things go up.
So it's taxes.
Taxes
skyrocket.
So it sucks more and more into your tax calculation.
I actually wrote an article a while back. I probably had to find it on our little retirement blog about that. And I really think it's just the genius way to write a tax bill, to tax people and convince them that they're not getting taxed, because if you're not increasing things for inflation, you know, hardly anyone is affected at first when the tax bill passes.
Only the evil rich.
Yeah, only the evil rich.
I'll never be in that place.
Just give it time, and everybody will phase into it. And that's kind of what's actually happening. We're seeing it more and more. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's in the near future where, I mean, I'm talking in my lifetime, where 85% of everybody's Social Security is getting taxed. So either way, that one grinds my gears. They do a similar thing right now, just on a side note, with the IRMA limits. So that's for Medicare, where they've actually frozen those limits temporarily.
And they've admitted that the reason why they freeze them is so that more and more people will be captured within the net of higher Medicare premiums.
Exactly.
So they've completely admitted, at least, which is one step better than what they used to do, which is not even admit that that was the proposal in the first place. But back in the 1980s and 1990s, when these limits, these income amounts where your Social Security becomes taxable, those amounts were set. It was argued upon passage that very few people are going to fall into this category where it's going to be taxable. It's only and they didn't use the phrase evil rich, but that's really what they're trying to say. The people that you'll never be, that you envy, that should be paying more taxes, they're the only ones who are going to get sucked into this.
What they meant was your children. Right. This is a tax for your children.
The evil rich, and then your regular income children will be sucked into this.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking. That's the essence of the tax torpedo, as far as or the source that as you receive Social Security income, it's either going to be tax free if your overall income is low enough, 50% of it taxed or 85% of it taxed. So how does this? That's just the taxability basic description. The torpedo. How does that work, Justin?
The torpedo. We got to remember that Social Security is tax preference, no matter how you look at it. But for someone that is, you know, I guess used to not being taxed on their Social Security or having very little of their Social Security taxed, and over time, as maybe RMDs or required minimum distributions kick in, or social, another spouse's Social Security kicks in, or other sources Social Security kick in, and suddenly a lot of it's being taxed. And you're getting taxed at extraordinary rates, it seems like, far higher than you ever were taxed before.
Right. And anything, when you start out from zero, anything you start to be taxed becomes extraordinary.
What's really unique about it is, you're still being taxed in your normal marginal tax rates, but you have suddenly an increase of dollars that are actually being taxed. So your effective tax rate is outrageous. We've seen it where people are kind of living on the edge of not having any Social Security taxed, and then a say, for instance, a capital gain distribution from a mutual fund or a distribution from whatever it might be causes taxable income that was unexpected, and they're getting hit at these effective rates that are outrageous, you know, maybe 85% higher than their normal rates of taxation. So it's quite unique. And understanding how Social Security gets phased into taxation and what, and understanding, I guess, what marginal brackets you're in at that point in time will give you a good idea of how one additional dollar or maybe 10,000 additional dollars of income will actually get taxed in an effective way, because you're dragging more money into taxation even though you're only bringing... Well, let's just put it this way. If you bring in a dollar of new income, you might be actually bringing in $1.50 or $1.85 of taxable income.
Well, let me maybe give a few simple numbers to explain what kind of person is not paying taxes on their Social Security right now.
Yeah.
Because some people think, oh, that's going to be somebody who doesn't make anything. Well, take this example. I just came up with this. Let's say someone, a married couple, and he has a Social Security benefit of $1,800 a month. She, the wife, has a Social Security benefit of $1,600 per month.
Pretty normal, I'd say.
Fairly normal,
sure.
Right? Right, kind of middle of the road, worked a full career, both of them, et cetera. Maybe some time off for kids or something. But those are not high numbers or low numbers. That's kind of slightly above average, we'll call it, but not much. And so that's a total income for the two of them from just Social Security of $40,800. And then they have another $10,000 that they withdraw from their 401k or other taxable sources to supplement this. So they're living on about $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
Those people under the formula do not pay any tax on their Social Security benefits.
No,
because
not at all.
The way you figure out whether they're taxable or not is you take half of their Social Security benefit. So in my example, $20,000 roughly would be half. And then they have another $10,000 of other types of income, so
right.
A total of $30,000. They fall underneath the $32,000 limit that triggers the first layer of Social Security taxes. So even though they're making over living on more than $50,000 worth of income coming in, the Social Security portion of that, which is the vast majority of it, $40,000 of it, is tax free. However, they're very close to being in a situation where it will get sucked into the tax calculation. And that's the threat of the torpedo.
Yeah.
Because these folks, let's say they're in their late 60s. And that $10,000 that they're taking out of their 401k is just that's by choice to supplement their income. But what then happens at 70, Justin?
Well, we all know your required minimum distributions kick in, and this creates an uncontrollable income source. You know, the government is forcing taxes on you at that point in time. And it really depends on how big that 401k is and how big those RMDs will be. And depending on that, it'll draw more and more of that Social Security into taxation. And I think even in more reality, you know, I think from everything that I see, Social Security is one of the biggest sources of income that most retirees have. So the figures you gave aren't outlandish at all. And additional with, you know, drawing income off of their IRA or 401k, these are real numbers, and they could additionally be drawing more and more off of it and still not see any taxes paid because of their standard deduction that they also receive. So they might be withdrawing, you know, call it $30,000 from their IRA and having some of that Social Security being subject to taxation, but it all gets wiped away with a standard deduction on their 1040. So,
and I wasn't even factoring that in. I was keeping the numbers
really
super really basic.
Simple, basic. But you know, now
they
we're talking
making even more. And
they could be
still
making not seeing any tax at all. But suddenly, when these RMDs kick in, and there's all this, you know, uncontrollable income. And I'm not saying like this is for these ultra rich people that have large RMDs. I just ran an analysis with somebody where they had very similar Social Security amounts, but we're talking about IRA balances around the, I believe it was the $450,000 mark, okay? That's not an exceedingly large retirement account to have, right? But based on the RMDs that are calculated off of that and the Social Security amounts, which I think were a little bit higher for both of them, it definitely caused them in RMD time after age 70 to be subject to the phasing in of Social Security into taxation.
So there's kind of a double whammy effect here, and that's where the torpedo part comes in. The double whammy is now you have to suddenly start recognizing more income because of these forced distributions from your retirement
accounts.
That's
the first one,
That's the first issue. But the side effect, the double whammy, is dollars from Social Security benefits that used to be tax-free now get captured into, now you've exceeded a certain limit that for a married couple filing a joint return, their combined income, once they hit $32,000.
That's under a special calculation,
which one of the big things there is only half of the Social Security benefit goes into that calculation. That's the big adjustment, but there's a few other things. If they hit that trigger, now 50% of their benefits, which used to be tax-free, are now sucked into the tax calculation.
Well, not immediately. Not like that. It's not like an immediate suck in. It phases in. So think of it like this. If they were right on the brink, say they had that, you know, it's called provisional income of $32,000, and it's right on the brink, all right, none of their Social Security is taxed, okay?
Right.
Now they bring in $1. All right.
If you barely eke in, it's a little different story. You're right.
Right. So
then what happens?
So what happens is all of a sudden you brought in $1 of additional income. Say that was your RMD of $1, real easy. Now all of a sudden, 50 cents of your Social Security is taxable. Okay. So now you brought in $1.50 extra into the tax equation. All right. And if your $1.50 is being taxed at whatever rate, call it, say you're being taxed at 10% before. Because you have $1.50 of additional income, that extra dollar is being taxed essentially at 15%. It's a 50% higher tax rate on that dollar of new income because of how Social Security is taxed.
Right. And that's the double whammy effect. Yeah. It didn't double it, but the double, it's like you got hit twice.
Oh, it's
you had the extra income forced upon you with the RMD, and you had to bring more money into the tax calculation.
It's a 50% increase in tax you have to pay on each additional dollar. And that's the better part of it. Because once you get into the next breakpoint or phase or whatever you want to say it, you're talking about how 50% is being taxed. Eventually, they start bringing in 85% at a rate. So rather than having a 85% increase in tax rate, because that's what effectively it does, 50%, it goes up to 85. So you'll be paying whatever your tax rate is, say it's 10%, now you're paying 18.5% on it. And it's even worse when you get into higher tax rates.
Yeah. So thus the torpedo that you have this plan and you've been experiencing these benefits, these Social Security benefits, tax-free or very low tax, and because of something out of your control at the time, and this is the issue at the point of reaching 70.5 when required minimum distributions start from these accounts, at this point it's now mostly out of your control. There's not much you can do to scramble around at that point to change the situation. you have to be thinking of this torpedo. Now, the point of bringing this up is so that you know this torpedo is out there. You can identify that it's headed for your finances in retirement, but you notice it early enough, maybe a decade or maybe more before, and then you can do something about it. Maybe not to avoid it completely, but to lessen the degree that it affects you.
There is absolutely no doubt that appropriate planning, whether it be through Social Security claiming strategies, through Roth conversion strategies, or simply withdrawal strategies out of accounts, that you can mitigate the effect of this for your lifetime. And there's no doubt about it.
Right. And this is one of those areas where so many people in retirement planning or financial planning in general focus on one thing specifically, and that is, how am I going to grow my assets? What rate of return can I get? What should I be investing in to create this nest egg? Mm. Well, any type of normal investing has risk. And so that means there's uncertainty. So you don't know. You put this plan in place. You don't know exactly what you're going to have. You can take steps that you'll probably be, reach your target or whatever and modify your approach along the way and that sort of thing. That's a whole different thing and a far more out of your control than recognizing that a torpedo is heading for your situation and taking steps understanding the tax code to lower your taxes, period. There's rules involved there. Investing, your success isn't based upon a rule, following a rule. In tax planning, it is. It is based on knowing the rules, understanding mm-hmm. them, and then making decisions in the right order so that the rules benefit you rather than cost you.
Exactly.
And so many people waste so much brain power on trying to pick the right this or, invest in this and not that and sell this then and buy this. All of that may or may not work out. That's up in the air. All those, nobody's guaranteed to do anything. But if you don't avoid the torpedo when you know it's coming, you are guaranteed to cost yourself more taxes. And in the end, it isn't so much what you grow your assets to or how much income you have. It's what you get to spend, which is what you get to keep in your pocket, not sending it off to taxes that you could legally avoid simply by making a series of correct decisions.
Yeah, I love that analogy, and I think you can really go another step. I mean, if you look at the, I guess, effective return of your investments, you got to factor in taxes on that. Mm-hmm. And if you are nearly doubling your tax rate on return dollars that you're pulling out of the account, or 85% higher taxes, right, then that is eating up that return. And if you can avoid that, you are just going to have a much stronger rate of return overall. So this should be, part of your investment plan, not the only aspect of it, but just a part that you got to think about.
Right. And it's a part that, the reason why I brought it up is it's a part that consistently is underappreciated. It's not nearly enough time is spent on that, and way too much time and effort is spent on things of questionable benefit, let's call it.
Right.
Maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't. But why would you spend that much time on something that's questionable when you could spend some time on something that for sure will save you money and allow you to spend more of what you end up with? So that's my point. We've got the music. That means we're at end of our first segment here on the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back, what are we going to hear here? We're going to hear something related to Social Security, in that it is one of the top songs from 1935 as we look back to the year that Social Security started. So stick with us through this short break, and we'll play that vintage song in honor of the beginnings of Social Security.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
I was standing
song from 1935. Got a little folksy country there. Yes. That is a very famous group. That's the Carter Family singing Can the Circle Be Unbroken? The song was written and performed by what's been termed the first family of country music. And the song was reworked from the hymn Will the Circle Be Unbroken by Ada Habersham and Charles Gabriel. And A.P. Carter and his wife Sarah and his sister-in-law Maybelle formed the original Carter Family Group. But by the late 40s, the group makeup changed to be Maybelle and her three daughters, Helen, June, and Anita. June Carter married Johnny Cash. So ooh. June Carter Cash. So there's a connection there. The first family.
Well, they
connected to one of the.
The two of them did that song together, and it's an extremely popular song.
Yeah, that song's gone around the horn a few times, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's been, anyway. So I think the 1935 top song as we look back to the year that Social Security started. We're coming up on another anniversary. It was August of that year, actually, that it was signed into law. And we're approaching the end of June here. So
it's exciting.
Yeah. So back to our tax torpedo issue, which is a Social Security-related effect in that recognizing that Social Security has preferable tax treatment in that some of the benefits or even all of your Social Security benefits, depending on your circumstances, can be taxed at zero or as your income increases, not from Social Security but from other sources, you can get in a situation for where up to 85% of your Social Security gets sucked into your taxable income figure. So planning for that, and we kind of alluded to this before the break, that if you knew ahead of time this torpedo was heading for you, you could take some steps to avoid it. But like any dilemma, I use this example in class actually at school where, you know, when you're driving a car down the highway, just like you're running your business, if you're driving a car down the highway, you look through the windshield and you look out as far as you can because you'd like to know if there's a curve in the road or a deer out there. Because if you notice it soon enough, you can make some logical, calculated adjustments to avoid it. Where if you wait till the deer is 1 foot in front of the hood of your car, you might be able to react, but it's not going to be pretty. Same thing with business, you know, some kind of a business example here, but the same kind of thing. You've got the here, it's not a deer in the road, it's the torpedo coming and
pointed right at you.
At you. And if you notice soon enough, you can maneuver around it, maybe not avoid it completely, but severely limit its effect. Where if you wait until you're right upon it, it's going to be too late. You can't possibly maneuver enough to avoid it. So
maybe identifying people or situations that people may be in currently where they could say, hey, you know what, I have that opportunity and maybe there are some planning opportunities for me to try and, I guess, get out of the way of that tax torpedo. Mm-hmm. I can definitely go down that rabbit hole. There's lots of different people that fit into that. And maybe give some, you know, a story of, or like a hypothetical of what people could do to avoid that tax torpedo. Does that sound good?
Yeah. So first, our assumption is you've recognized the importance of planning for your future because you're not going to identify the. I guess one approach is to plug your ears, close your eyes, approach retirement hoping for the best. That's unfortunately the approach of way too many people. Let's assume that you have done some planning, and here's a prime example of the value of having a plan, and through that planning process, you have identified the tax torpedo is a possibility for you out, say, 10 years. Mm-hmm. So let's say you're 60 years old. What could you do in your early 60s to avoid the future tax torpedo?
Well, let's look into the future. What are the things that cause the tax torpedo? Generally, it's that those RMDs or other income being phased in, right? But generally, it's those RMDs that just drive it home. There's no doubt about that. So when there's, you know, you're forced to take money out of your 401k or your IRA and you're forced to pay taxes on it, it forces you to pay even more taxes because your Social Security suddenly becomes taxable. So some of the things that you might want to look into are trying to drive down those required minimum distributions as much as possible. And there's several ways to do that. First is through a tax planning strategy where you are maximizing your tax brackets currently through whether it's a withdrawal strategy, like choosing where to take your money from. You know, you might have options. You might be able to say, I want to take it from my 401k or my IRA, or you might say, you know what, I want to take it from my non-qualified or simply taxable assets that are simply not IRA or retirement assets, or you might just have money in the bank, whatever it might be. You have all these options. So choosing the right option is step number one.
Right. And this is a case where a dollar isn't the same as another dollar or another dollar, depending on what bucket you're pulling it from.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I shouldn't use the word bucket because we talk about bucketing strategy, yeah. but what box you've got it stored in. You've got money in a box that is going to be taxable when it comes out. Hopefully you've got some money in a box that is tax-free when it comes out,
right.
Maybe a Roth type of account.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some money in a box that may or may not be taxable, and the dollars that come out are probably taxed at less than a dollar. Variety of reasons for that, and anything with tax basis in it, so
right.
A traditional investment account. So if you've got choices, reaching into one of those boxes for a dollar to go on vacation or to spend when you're in your 60s...
makes a big difference.
It's not the same. It's not the same. And the effect today might not be that much different, but the choice of which box you reach into can ultimately determine whether you're going to get hit by the tax torpedo or not, right?
There's no doubt about that. And you can also reach into that. We always call it the always taxable, the maybe taxable, or the never taxable boxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can reach into those always taxable boxes and do other things with it, too. You can do Roth conversions, if it makes sense mm-hmm. for some people, which that takes money off of the table for the required minimum distribution calculation, but it doesn't take money off of the table for your future assets, right? So it's a great little idea, but it's the size of those withdrawal strategies or the size of those Roth conversions that are going to make the true difference, right? If you can only do a little bit because you're maxing out certain tax brackets already, maybe it's not so effective.
Mm-hmm.
So doing some income planning from the sense of when do I turn on my Social Security or when do I turn on my pension makes a massive difference.
Right.
That is where the game can be changed.
And some people can have a lot of flexibility in their early 60s with choosing boxes. For instance, people who are completely relying on those boxes for
mm-hmm.
income, meaning someone who's retired, you know, mm-hmm. they're not working anymore. So they don't have this salary, which is hopefully at that point in their career, fairly substantial. They don't have that driving them into certain tax brackets. And then they're choosing which boxes to take supplemental income out of, or maybe do Roth conversions. People who have retired at that point, say in their early 60s, have opened what we call the tax planning window is
yeah.
what I call it.
Yeah.
You have some
no, we're
crazy...
on. We've adopted.
Have we embraced the window?
We've embraced the window.
Okay, good.
I think some of our write-ups still have tax void written in
yeah.
it, but the window has been embraced.
Okay,
yeah.
good. So we've opened the window by not having our salary to contend with. Now we've got all kind of flexibility about which box do we reach into? Do we turn on our Social Security or not? And other people, though, aren't going to be as flexible. And you
mm-hmm.
have to recognize your circumstances. Some of this, you know, some people are locked into a path where it's going to be very difficult or impossible to avoid the tax torpedo.
Oh,
but they would have had to make decisions back in their 30s and 40s in order to have changed their current torpedo.
There's no doubt about
targeting.
It. And my argument for that is Social yeah. Security is still tax preference.
Right.
You're
do what you can do.
You're dealing what you have to deal with. But
right.
there's a lot of people out there that.
They have a window, but they don't know they need to go through it.
Right.
They don't know they need to take advantage of that
right.
open window. They're just sitting there next to an open window doing their own thing, you know, thinking, oh, boy, that's a nice window there. I don't know what it's for, but that's sure a nice window there.
Or they don't know what they don't know.
They don't even know
yeah.
that the window exists, right?
yeah.
So this ties into what we always, always talk about when taxes seem to come around, and that's don't waste the opportunity of the tax planning window, because this torpedo issue can be dealt with during the tax planning window quite effectively.
There's no doubt about it. And I think this is probably one of the hands down strongest arguments for and there are some strong arguments out there for delaying your Social Security income. Because as we know, I mean, you guys talk about it all the time, your Social Security income increases substantially as you delay it.
Right.
But everyone's worried about that, you know, they're not going to get the most out of it because they're delaying it, right? I get that, okay? But we
usually they're looking at that simplistically and not the part we're talking about today.
Exactly.
The tax question.
Exactly.
By the choice they're making, I'm a genius because I'm going to get money out of it before there isn't any more Social Security. Well, they're drinking that Kool-Aid, which isn't going to happen, right? That's Social Security isn't going to go to zero in anyone's lifetime that's listening to this podcast or this radio show. So, they're making a choice with blinders on. They're not understanding the whole story when it comes to the tax
question. It's super interesting because when you run the numbers side by side, someone taking their Social Security, even at a normal time, like their full retirement age, age 66, 67, whatever it may be, and kind of funding their retirement early on with that Social Security and then getting nailed with RMDs and the tax torpedo, right? We've talked about that already. Simply delaying Social Security and forcing yourself to remove money out of IRAs or 401ks during that time period where you don't have the income, what does that do? Lowers your RMDs in the future. Mm-hmm. So you've not only increased your Social Security amount that you're going to be able to take home by up to 32%, you've also decreased the amount that's subject to taxation, so you're taking home more. It's incredible. It's a multiplier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, and when we're talking about this, we're not making a blanket recommendation that everyone should delay their Social Security to 70 or something. That's why we run a Social Security analysis, because everybody's it drives me crazy, and Social Security in particular, because I do a lot of work in that Social Security area. You see all these articles run across your news feed on social media or whatever, and it's all, I swear, in my same news feed, and this I'm sure I create myself because I look at Social Security topics, which then they're like, ooh, let's give Chris some more news feed about Social Security.
You live in your Social Security echo chamber.
Right. When I scroll down the list from these different publications, and I noticed even from the same publication last week, there was an article, Why You Should Claim Social Security at 62, and down a few stories in my news feed was Why You Should Delay Your Social Security to 70. Well, gee, which one is it? There's not one rule. There's not one reason to do one or the other. It's just part of the overall plan.
Right.
What these things should be saying, and they never do, because they'll describe a story about someone who, you know, claimed at 62, and then they list all the reasons it was a good idea for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't kind of give you the punchline, but you should assess your own circumstances and decide what's best for you. Mm-hmm. They seem to never leave that in there, or put that in there at the end.
Or maybe have someone who really understands the circumstances and help you assess it, and then decide for yourself, or maybe with the help of someone else, what is really best for you.
Right. So there are definitely there's reasons and justification to claim for people at 62 or 63 or 66. There's justification and reasons for people to claim at 70. And one of the reasons to delay to 70, and we've listed many in the past. I'm not, you know, some of the big ones which people tend to forget is by delaying to 70, one of a couple, that will leave the greatest benefit for the survivor when the first person dies.
Yeah.
You have to remember that when the first person dies, the survivor doesn't get to keep both benefits. One of them goes away. So it'd be nice if one of them was kind of big. So people are always making this Social Security claiming decision looking at their own benefits to be received in their own lifetime, completely ignoring what's going to be left for the survivor. There's one reason.
I just ran into a situation, I mean, this week and last week, where it's almost that exact scenario. Someone with very short longevity prospects. They are pretty much planning on passing away in their late 70s. And they were all on board for claiming Social Security as soon as possible. But, you know, looking at it, his spouse didn't have the same longevity issue. And, you know, essentially through looking at the numbers, we reverse their claiming strategy. It's you need to delay your Social Security and she needs to claim earlier. Yeah, so you got to look at every situation differently. There's no doubt about
it. Right. So it's don't let anybody tell you this is the way to do it or this is what you should do unless someone has looked at your entire situation to include the tax situation. Any kind of one of these analysis that is run that isn't looking at your tax situation is not fully understanding the situation.
I would definitely go out there and say, if you are working with a software on your own or you're working with a planner that is doing some sort of projections for you, I would drill them on how taxes are being calculated. Because if they are just taking an effective rate and applying that through the rest of your retirement, they are doing you one of the biggest disservices they can do. One of the reasons we went out and found a software and used this software and chose it is because it has a very strong tax engine behind it and probably one of the best in the industry. So you got to find the right person with the right software. This is no back of the envelope calculation.
Right. When you're deciding specific things like, you know, what's the timing of doing certain withdrawals from certain boxes versus recognizing other income via pensions or Social Security, you've got to have a very detailed tax calculation going on. Otherwise, you're just winging it. Otherwise, you're kind of just approximating, but it's so broadly that you're missing the fine details that's going to reveal what your true strategy should be. So some of these things, yes, it's a plan. So I guess I should have revised my recommendation from before. Right. You don't just need a plan. You need a good plan. I mean, you need a robust plan that is going to capture as much of what's going to affect your finances in retirement as possible. Because anything you leave out, those little details are what make the decision, will help you decide, should I claim at 62 or 64? Should I do a Roth conversion when I'm, the year after that I retire because I've got this nice big tax planning window that's opened up before me and I can now get that money that's been trapped in this account building up a future tax ramification. I can whittle that down during this time between 62 and, when I retire and 68 or 70 or whenever I decide to turn on some other income. You've got to realize you have opportunities and take advantage of them. Opportunities are there. Opportunities for benefits from planning are there. But you've got to be able to identify them before you can even choose to take advantage of them or not. And so many people are just missing it. So many people, not through their own fault necessarily, but this stuff is complicated. Taxes are complicated. Social Security is complicated. IRAs and 401ks, they sound simple, but the rules and the ramifications of your decisions are complicated.
There is no doubt about that. And no matter how smart you are, I mean, before I got into this industry, this is a personal story here. I had a good education. I had a master's degree, MBA with an emphasis in finance. I have a strong financial background. But before I really started studying all of these retirement tools and accounts and things like that, I had no idea of the planning opportunities. I thought I knew that, okay, well, yeah, it'll all come out in the wash is kind of what I always said. I mean, that was, it'll come out in the wash. Whether you're saving into a Roth or a 401k or an IRA, it'll come out in the wash, It's not true. With appropriate planning, appropriate projections, you can make some very wise decisions and mitigate the risks of, many of the risks that come through retirement, but especially the tax risks.
Right. So we've actually got about 4.5 minutes, so I wanted to answer one quick email question that we've gotten. Still on Social Security, but it's a quick one, so we can knock this out, and we're a little behind answering questions. So this one has come in not too long ago, about a month ago, we received this question. And it is talking about earning quarters of coverage in Social Security. Those are the credits that you need to earn 40 of in order to qualify for a retirement benefit. So his question, it's coming from him from Arizona, is regarding the 1978 rule change about earning quarters of credit, am I grandfathered in prior to 1978? I have a couple years in the 60s, where I may have only been credited for one quarter of credit because I made all the money in January, even though I had enough wages to pay for four credits.
Hmm.
So back in before 1978, there was this, in order to receive a credit, and you could earn up to four, and they were called quarters back then because it was four times per year,
mm-hmm.
you had to have at least, not much, but $50 of earnings in each quarter to get the four credits for the year. You had to have earned $50 January, February, March. You had to earn $50 in the April, May, June, etc.
So seasonal workers
were punished, okay. And they realized that and fixed this back in 1978. They removed that in 1978, and then you still had to earn, you know, back in 78 it was $200, 50 times 4.
Right.
But you could earn it all in January, and you'd get four credits for the year.
Makes sense.
He's saying back in the 60s, he only got one credit, even though he earned plenty to get four that year because he earned it in January. Unfortunately, they don't retroactively fix this.
Oh, no.
So back in the 60s, those are going to be stuck in there. Just for people's information, in 2018 now, to earn one credit for the year, you have to earn $1,320. So you've got to earn four times that, which is what, $5,280, which is... Since we're mile high, it just seems like a weird coincidence, but $5,280. But that could all come on January 1st, and the only extra requirement is you have to live into each of the four quarters of the year to get the credits.
Oh, right.
Side note, if you pass away, even though you earned enough, pass away before you've lived into each quarter, so you have to live to October 1st. Because then you've lived into that fourth quarter.
Oh, my goodness. So
could
potentially destroy a survivor scenario.
We had someone with that exact issue.
Wow.
A surviving wife, a widow, was denied survivor benefits because her husband died mid-year, even though that year he earned enough to get over the 40-credit hump.
Oh.
But they didn't credit him those last two credits.
So she
gets no survivor benefit.
What bad luck.
Yeah. So,
and there's no exceptions on that, clearly. They're not going
to... He had to have lived. And they removed the seasonal earning of wages.
But the living aspect.
But the living aspect still is attached to the quarters. Kind of bizarro. But yeah. So for this person, sorry, we can't go back and fix your 1960s issues. But everybody who has earnings since 1978, we don't have to worry about when during the year you earn them.
His earnings still count towards it, right? He could go out and earn a few more quarters by...
Yeah, so if he's short, he's got some ways to go out. You know, you just continue working until you've hit 40. Once, this was so long ago, I'm surprised. He doesn't make mention of whether he's short his 40 or not, but maybe he is. And that's why. But you don't get any extra benefit if you earn 50 credits or 60 or 70.
It's right.
Once you get to 40, the green light goes on. You've now qualified. And now it's your overall amount of earnings that goes into the calculation for what you get. It's
right.
not about credits at
right.
this point. The
right.
credits part is just to enable you to receive benefits.
It's entry to the party, huh?
Correct.
All right.
So that music means we're at the end of the Retirement and IRA show. We really appreciate you being with us. Covered a couple of questions here related to Social Security. I think next week Jim will be back. Have no idea what the topic will be, but I'm sure it'll be thrilling. We can ask him about his fishing excursion that caused him to miss today's show. So hope everybody has a great Saturday, and we'll be back with you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.